Tomorrow is Judgment Day. Not the Judgment Day, but a Judgment Day. Because being the first Tuesday in November, tomorrow in the United States of America is Election Day. And I use the word judgment in its meaning of both a danger and an opportunity, both a crisis and also a revelation. Because as the polls are open and we have the unique and privileged opportunity to choose our leaders, it will be revealed tomorrow how aware Christians are of the opportunity they have to set this nation on a course that will, in its laws and policies and decisions, uphold the laws of God, starting with the law, "Thou shalt not kill." It will be revealed tomorrow how closely Christians have been reading the signs of the times and how aware they are of how closely divided this nation and its government is in regard to the fundamental rights of human beings under the law. It will be revealed tomorrow how aware Christians are that the number one danger facing this country and oppressing this country is abortion. It will be revealed tomorrow how alert Christians are to their responsibility to do something about it by electing people who will not turn the other way and say it's a private matter when children are being murdered at the rate of 4,000 a day. Tomorrow is Judgment Day. Tomorrow is the day when it will be revealed whether or not Christians will be more concerned about their own pocketbooks or their own party than about the security of their children and grandchildren and the kind of society that's going to be made by the leaders that we put into office. Tomorrow is Judgment Day. Because it will be revealed how aware we are that when the Judgment Day comes, God will ask us, "What did you do with your vote? Did you even know the identity and the positions and the character of the person that you helped put into office?" Brothers and sisters, the Bible deals with the subject of government twice as much as it deals with matters of personal spirituality. Did you realize that? Our Lord has a lot to say about government and about the respect and protection of human life. And through EWTN, you have been hearing a lot about the elections and about the issues that matter the most. And I want to, as we are now on the eve of Election Day, talk to you about the 10 Election Day traps. I want to alert you to 10 traps that are lurking, waiting for you, and I want to help you avoid them, and I want you to help others avoid them. Here's trap number one. Election Day rolls around, and we start thinking to ourselves, "I'm really nobody. I'm a nobody. I have one vote, and that vote really doesn't count anyway." Well, brothers and sisters, this overlooks the lessons of history that tell us that your vote really does count and that you're not a nobody. Do we have to remind one another of what we went through 2 years ago with that presidential election that seemed like it was lasting forever thanks to a few hundred votes? Are our memories that short that we forgot the lessons that that election taught us? Above all, that every vote does count? And less well known are some other lessons of history. For example, back in 1845, in the United States Congress, the state of Texas became a state by one single vote. In 1923, one single vote in the German parliament gave Hitler the leadership of the Nazi Party. One vote. A shift of less than one vote per precinct in a handful of states would have defeated Woodrow Wilson in his bid for re-election in 1916. And a few votes per precinct in Illinois and a couple of other states would have meant that Vice President Richard Nixon would have defeated John F. Kennedy in 1960. And the same is true for elections on every level. In 1974, for example, Congressman Lewis Wyman was declared the victor in the U.S. Senate race in New Hampshire after a recount by just two votes. And if only a few additional people in each precinct in Ohio had voted differently in the 1976 presidential race, Ford would have been our president, not Carter. Around the same time, the governor of Ohio beat out the challenging candidate by a margin of one vote per precinct. And the examples can be multiplied on and on and on. The point is very simple. Don't fall into the trap of thinking that you're a nobody and that your vote doesn't count. Trap number two. Oh, but I can't be a single-issue voter. Well, did you realize that most people are? For most people, it's one issue that overrides all the other considerations and drives them either to support or to oppose a candidate. That issue can be any number of things. But there's nothing unusual or wrong about being motivated by a single issue in the way that you vote. But if you don't want to be a single-issue voter, at least you can be an intelligent voter and understand that there are certain issues on which all the other issues rest. And we've been talking for a long time here about the fact that unless you have the right to life secure, the right to health and housing and education and all sorts of other things doesn't do any good to a dead person. You have to have the right to life secure in order for a society to function. And unfortunately, in our laws, that right is not secure. And tomorrow, we in America have the opportunity. Now understand this. This election is so close that we have the opportunity tomorrow. We could end up being in a position where we have more people in government who are dedicated to preserving the right to life than we have ever had since Roe versus Wade. It's possible. It's possible that this can happen if enough of us really get to work tomorrow. So, the line I've used all around the country and will continue to use, if a politician cannot respect the life of a little baby, how's he supposed to respect yours? Let's have no question about it. If somebody were running for office and they said they were in favor of killing people over 70 years old, or of killing teenagers, they would be not only laughed off laughed out of consideration. They'd be put in prison, probably. I mean, there would be uprisings. People would say, "What in the world is wrong with this person?" Well, so it is, morally speaking, with abortion. There's no difference, morally speaking. You mean to tell me that you're going to present yourself as a public servant? And you say it's okay that babies have their heads pulled off their bodies and their arms and legs twisted off and thrown in the garbage and crushed? You mean to tell me you're presenting yourself as a candidate for public office worthy of my support and you think that's to be tolerated? I don't care what you think, personally speaking. That's not going to matter when you get into office and bills come before you and you have to vote yes or no. I care about what you intend to do. And if you're telling me you don't intend to stop this Holocaust, well then, you're not worthy of any kind of public office. And I don't care how big or small that office is. Some candidates use the excuse that they're not going to be in a position to determine the legality of abortion. What I'm concerned is about what your position says, not about the legality of abortion, but about you. What kind of character do you have? And therefore, brothers and sisters, don't fall into this trap of saying, "I don't want to be a single-issue voter." The point of the matter is that if you have a choice between somebody who is in favor of abortion and somebody who's not, then it is the one who is not in favor of abortion, it is the one who is willing to stand up for the protection of life, that is more worthy of your vote. It's that fundamental. Now, of course, by the way, I want to commend the website of EWTN has an election or voters catechism. It's a short, couple of short articles by Father Stephen Taracco and by Colin Donovan, who answers a lot of the questions of the viewers. I'm going to just quote what's on the website. It's very well said. Father Taracco says, "If a political candidate supported abortion or any other moral evil, such as assisted suicide and euthanasia for that matter, it would not be morally permissible for you to vote for that person." Right there on the EWTN website, very well said. Colin says, quote, those who are anti-life and anti-family manifest a darkening of conscience, a darkening which makes their other political decisions inherently untrustworthy. Now, having said that, right away, we come to the next trap, and this confuses a lot of people. The third trap, the Election Day trap, is they're all bums. No candidate is worthwhile. And they look at the issue of abortion and say, well, you know, they're all in favor of it in this particular race. Or one is worse than the next. Well, brothers and sisters, the trap here is to look for the non-existent perfect candidate. I must inform you, St. Paul is not running for office tomorrow. Neither is St. Teresa, neither is Jesus. All right? They're all problematic. Every single last candidate running for every single office has something about him or her that is not acceptable. Big deal. So what? So do we all. The point of the matter is, who's going to be better to be elected to this particular office for a limited period of time? This is not choosing the lesser of two evils. We may never choose evil. This is choosing to limit evil. And when you choose to limit evil by choosing the candidate who's going to do the least amount of damage, you are choosing a good. Let's make that clear again. Let's give some hypotheticals. And again, this is on the EWTN website, and I want this to be clear. On the website it says, what if one leading candidate is anti-abortion, except in cases of rape or incest, and another leading candidate is completely pro-abortion? Well, in that case, from what I just said, it's obvious you vote for the better one. You vote for the one who's going to be willing to protect more lives than the one who's going to turn his back on them all. Yeah, that's right. If they're not willing to protect all lives, then that's problematic. But we're not voting here for canonization. We're voting here for somebody to get in to at least limit the damage. And if you choose that, it doesn't mean you agree with their exceptions. It means you use your common sense to say, look, if this pro-abortion person gets in there, all these babies remain unprotected. If this one gets in and they want to protect 90% of them, well, at least we're a step beyond and above and better than where we were before. That is choosing a good. That is not choosing to be to have exceptions on abortion. That is not violating principle. That's choosing to limit the evil, and that's a good. And then the question goes on, well, what if there's a trailing candidate, one who really doesn't have the kind of political base to realistically be elected at this point, is not likely to win, but is completely anti-abortion? Do I have to vote for that person because they're completely anti-abortion? No, you don't have to. You don't have to, because your vote, again, is a practical exercise. You want to actually get somebody in. You want to help to actually get somebody in who's going to limit the damage and the harm being done. What if all the candidates are pro-abortion? Do I have to abstain from voting? No. Once again, you assess the two and you find out, is there anything better about the one than about the other? Even if the only difference is that one is willing to ban partial birth abortion, again, that's a step forward, brothers and sisters. That's a step forward. So, let's move on with the different traps. Election day trap number four, the election doesn't matter. After all, we don't put our trust in earthly powers, we put it in the Lord. Absolutely. Our trust is not in the political process, it's in God. But God himself gives us the obligation to be involved in the political process. We're not saying politics is our salvation. We're saying it's our duty. And God gives us that duty to make some changes in society. Trap number five is the I'll show them trap. You know what that means? Some people actually use their vote to work out some kind of personal frustration or anger at somebody, or to take revenge. Some candidate or some party did something that they don't like, and so now they want to show them by voting in a particular way. Please leave the rest of us out of it. If you have a particular frustration or problem to work out, don't work it out in the voting booth. Go down to the gym and hit a punching bag. Go out into a field and yell, you know, talk it through with a psychologist or with some friends. Don't take it out on the rest of us. By going in there and helping to put somebody into office who for years to come is going to enact policies that are going to be damaging our society long after you've forgotten whatever personal gripe you might have. The voting booth is not a place or a time to work out personal problems. It's a time to elect people who are going to move this nation forward in the right direction. Trap number six, the media says. Friends, don't listen to the news reports on election day until after you vote. Some people listen to the news reports and they think they can tell the future, you know, these news reporters, some of them. And they do a lot of damage by saying ahead of time that so-and-so looks like is going to win, or they declare races for such-and-such before all the people have even voted. Now, this is an injustice that has to be reformed, but aside from that, just you decide who the right person is that you're going to vote for, and vote for them no matter what anybody says, even if they're sitting behind a news desk on one of the major networks. Don't listen to anything. Don't be swayed by what the media is saying. Just go in there and vote for the person that you're convinced is the right one. Another trap, number seven, I'll go later. You get up on election day. Oh, yeah, it's election day today. I have to vote. Oh, I'll go after work. I'll go tonight. Listen, you don't know what kind of calamities are going to arise during the day that are going to make it impossible for you to go later. Go early. Go first thing in the morning. And if the weather is bad, listen, brave the weather. All right? It's worth the sacrifice. Here's your opportunity to carry the cross. And if some people that you know can't get out because it's bad weather or for some other reason, you give them a call. You offer to take them. You get people. You know, it all boils down, in the end, not to the arguments or the polls or the dynamics. It all boils down to who shows up. The ones that are going to win the election tomorrow are the people who have the most supporters who actually show up at the polling place. So don't talk about going later. Go as soon as possible. The other trap, until next time. That's when at the end of election day you say, now I don't have to worry about another election for a while. Yes, you do. The time to start working on the next election is now, is today. And finally, the final two traps, being overconfident if things go the right way and being dejected if things go the wrong way. Avoid both of those traps. Whatever the outcome is, we know what our mission is. We've got a task to accomplish. We have a limited amount of time to do it, so we not want to waste time and energy in, you know, lamenting a bad outcome or in being lazy because, oh, now we got the right people and they're going to do our job for us. No. We have to do our job, and that is to be faithful to the Good Shepherd who came that they may have life and have it abundantly. And brothers and sisters, His grace is with us now as we approach not the judgment day, but a judgment day. I have said clearly and frequently what I need to say regarding this election. And now, brothers and sisters, it's up to you. Amen.